Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 118 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I'm really excited to be back, and I'm really even more excited to have received so many good messages from you guys lately. As I said in the previous episode, I can't believe that it's been so long. Like the last episode before the most recent one was in October. So we're talking half a year that's just flown by so fast. So that was really kind of an eye opener for me, and I'm happy that the new show has been well received, and I'm happy that of your email saying how much you're glad that the show is back, and it's giving me motivation and energy to continue to do it, even though as I'm working a full-time job at the moment, it can sometimes be a little stressful, and it can sometimes be a little tough to organize as well, but I'd happily do it. You know, it's my service to you guys and the language learning community as a whole, and maybe the world as well, but I wouldn't go that far just yet. The first thing I just have to quickly mention is I want to give thanks to Glosca for sponsoring this season of the program, and it would mean the world to me if you guys want to check out Glosca. You can do that by going to tryglosca.com to get a sample of a you get a free sample to get started, and then it's a monthly fee to keep going. The advantage of this monthly fee is that you get access to all languages, so they have about 30 different languages and combinations and triangulations and stuff. So it's a really cool project, and I really appreciate that they are supporting the show in such a way that allows me to produce the episodes more easily and keep going, most importantly. So really appreciate it, Gloska. Give it a try at trygloska.com. And the other thing I just want to quickly mention, today's episode is really cool. It's with Mihalis from Language Transfer, and it's a site that I've kind of had my eyes on for a long time, but for some reason I never really got involved in it, and I didn't really try it, to be honest. I just heard about it and I saw it everywhere, and I finally saw the name again on Reddit. There was an Ask Me Everything on Reddit, or Ask Me Anything, I believe it's called. And Mihalis was doing this Q&A, and I just thought, okay, well, the time is ripe. I want to hear more about this interesting person, and invited him on the show, and he immediately said yes. And this is the interview that you're about to hear. So for those of you who don't know, Language Transfer is a series of courses for various languages that takes an approach not too far from Michel Thomas. I think the language transfer method is actually better. It seems more kind of, don't know how to put it. It just seems better executed. Like whereas Michel Thomas, I think there's a bit of a, it's a bit flashy, and it's a bit of a. It's a product of its time as well. You know, most of them are probably recorded in the 80s and 90s, where we didn't have technology, we didn't have as much research, we didn't know as much as we know today. So it's a really cool episode, and if one thing I really need to encourage you guys to do here is if you appreciate language transfer and you like the courses, do consider donating to the cause so he can keep doing them, because he says he is under a bit of pressure at the moment, which I can only fully understand. I've been there as well myself, and he has a Patreon running, and there's a donate a few different donate options. So definitely check that out if you're interested. But yeah, before we get into it, I also just want to quickly mention my new show, which is called Language Learner Weekly, which is more of a ranty, timely news kind of show where I go over topics of the week or upcoming events or any kind of timely thing that we can discuss there. I also take questions and comments from you guys, the listeners, and it just gives me a kind of a speaking pipe, a kind of a way to communicate more timely, whereas this podcast is really intended to be evergreen. So the information that I'm sharing in the interview segment after this introduction is more, you know, you can listen to it now or 5 years from now, it should give you the same value. Whereas Language Transfer Weekly, not Language Transfer Weekly, that would be a funny podcast. Language Learner Weekly, sorry, which you can find at anchor.fm/language learner. It's more, yeah, it's sort of just a show to keep you going, 20 to 30 minutes every week, just a casual show. Do call in with your comments or questions. I'm really looking forward to them. So, without further ado, here is the interview with Mihalis from Language Transfer.
Yeah, but it's a systemic problem because you have all of the language learning material. Like if you go out to buy something, it's promises, really unrealistic promises. And then, like you open your book and you read about all of, I mean, like the preterite and the continuous and stuff, and you just think, oh my God, okay, I just must be stupid. Like, so you have that for one part, and then you have what happens at school for the other part, which is mostly just like exposing you all the time to the language because there's not really any real methodology happening there. They're just exposing you and trying to keep a class of children from like destroying the class, So, yeah, like I totally understand the why people feel like that. And I did, like I changed my degree. I started a law degree. I did that for a year and then I changed to languages and I had no idea like how I was going to do that. Like I was like, I just, I was an adult already. Like I was monolingual and I was like, how the hell? Like I had no idea how it would happen, but I just, it was, it just, the idea of it just felt so magical and I hated law so much.
Wow. Well, I mean, if you don't mind, I'll just use that as like the start of the talk because that was a great way to sort of segment into your language
Well, I'm not
story.
sure if I did. I'm not sure if I just said it because I thought it, and I get really distracted when I'm talking. But like that's what led to the project.
Yeah. How did you go from studying law to making a complete switch over to languages?
Depression,
Okay.
basically. I mean, I was so excited about going to university and what I would find there, and and living in the university and all of that. And I got there, and I guess it was just really disappointing on a lot of levels. And but it was also like a really international university, so I was surrounded by all these people from all over the world and all these different languages, and it just seemed like, okay, if nothing else mattered, if it didn't matter, like what I should be doing, because I had all of these ideas of, trying to be like successful, those ideas that you grow up with,
Sure.
like, thing to be worth something, et cetera, et cetera. And in the UK at least, that was like law. And yeah, I guess it was just being so like miserable with that and having such a disappointment from my first year at university that made me just like strip it all down and go like, okay, what would just make me excited about getting up and being at university? And I looked at every course there was, and I chose humanities, which was something to, which was just like in humanities, you could mix and choose any courses of the humanities department where languages were included. So I said, okay, I'm going to do that, and then I found myself like filling it all up with languages. It was a really slow process, like to realize, oh, languages are my magic, because I'd never done it before, but that was what just felt so magical and exciting. Just, I had my first year at university, I was just totally depressed and just getting by. And then this complete shift where I was just full of energy and excitement and curiosity.
Wow, that's incredible. And did you what are you in what are your languages going into university? Obviously English is perfect. What
That's
other
the English,
languages did you know at
because
that time?
I was born in the UK. My parents are from Cyprus, but they kind of just used Greek to speak in secret or whatever. So, and I asked them when I was a kid to talk to me in Greek, but there's also like some other issues there, like with cultural assimilation, and some families chose not to pass on the language, which I think is a terrible thing. And so I was totally monolingual, although I had a certain ear for Cypriot Greek, let's say, because I'd grown up around it, but I didn't really understand it. Only bits and pieces and in context and stuff. So yeah, it was like just totally going into an unfamiliar world. And also in the UK, it was obligatory to study French until you were 13 or something, but I'd been kicked out of that class because of my behavior. So I hadn't I had like literally no background in language, but I was so excited about it that in the summer between law and changing to languages, I started to study Japanese, like whilst I was working at a call center. That was like learning the scripts and some words and structures and whatever whilst I was on the phone. You know, I was just, it just filled me with energy, but I was totally monolingual when I went into it.
Right. Well, what a crazy experience. I don't think I've heard that anywhere in over 100 interviews on the first guy.
I don't know if anybody ever asked me that, to be honest.
All right. Well, I think it's important, you know, how you get started. And
I think people assume that, you know, it's something from your life and whatever, but it really wasn't in my case.
Exactly the opposite, it seems like you wanted something else that you had.
Yeah, it was also kind of reclaiming something in a way, because you know, when you're born a foreigner in this way, like which I guess it's a complicated way to describe it, and it really depends how you feel, but let's say like if you're born in the diaspora or whatever, especially if you don't speak the other language, mm-hmm. or your language or however you want to call it, then you know, you're a little bit lost. You're not completely one thing, you don't have anything else either. And I guess that also, like, it was almost kind of like learning Spanish, which was my main language. It was kind of getting some I don't know if I would say like getting some Mediterranean-ness back, but you know, like kind of some stuff I was denied access to, like in some way. I don't know if that makes much sense, or if I want you to include that.
well, I think it makes sense. It's perfect sense. I mean, it's a very deep topic about identity and sort of how you feel you belong in the community, in the society, and
it's always my problem with interviews, because all of the, I mean, language transfer was just a very organic product of my life, you know. So I always have to get into this kind of really deep stuff, and
people love it, man.
I try to be brief and coherent, but I think I achieve the opposite most of the time.
That's not a problem. I think that people love this stuff, you know, like when they hear some real issues, and it's not just like, well, do flashcards 3 times a day and you'll be fine. You know, when you hear the real life issues, or not necessarily issues, but also
it's also interesting because a lot of people write to me with a similar story, you know, like, hey, my grandparents are Greek, or my parents are, you know, and they didn't teach me the language because of X, Y, and Z, and now I'm taking it back, and language transfer has been like the tool to do that. And so that's really nice as well, you know, to see, like, and I always enjoy replying like, hey, surprisingly, this was kind of my experience, or part of the experience which led to like building this.
Yeah, I'm even thinking about my own experience. It's not exactly the same, I will say, but I was sort of stuck in an English degree, which is aimed at making you into like a high school teacher for English. And I just didn't know what to do with my life. And I was just bored. The degree wasn't tempting, and the job propositions were also terrible. I couldn't imagine myself doing that. So I just quit everything. And I was like, what is the one thing that I could imagine being valuable, that I would really enjoy being good at, that I could find a use for anywhere in the world? And I just went into languages, and I didn't really have much experience with it either. So in a way, that's similar to what you did in uni.
Yeah. And I just learned that I'm the kind of person that needs to be excited constantly to, like, you know, stay on top of everything. And I don't know, I guess it's just, it's magical things in the world which fascinate me, which is like nature and language and music. I mean, it's a type of magic, if you think that, you know, you can transpose the idea of a pink elephant or whatever into somebody else's mind, which as far as we know, an elephant can't do that, or a giraffe can't do that, you know. And yeah, for me, that's a type of magic, in the same way that we can communicate like feelings with music and sound and frequencies and the space we leave between them, and the things we overlook in life as well, that we just take for granted. And they're the most, for me, the most magical things that surround us.
Yeah, agreed, totally. So how do you stay excited about it? Let's say you're learning a language, and there's a lot of nitty gritty. You know, you have to put a lot of effort in, you have to put a lot of hours in, and the progress isn't always smooth. So how do you stay excited about it when you're struggling for the 500th time about some kind of point or some kind of silly little thing?
I really think it's about the material, you know, which is why I made language transfer. I had all of these frustrating experiences until I started to look at language this way. And then, you know, like I was speaking and almost had no idea where it was coming from. And then I was fluent and was just like, where is this coming from? You know? And the thing with the language transfer courses is that every single class, you know how to say more stuff, and it's not memorized stuff. They're not sentences and, you know, colors and how's the weather and all of that frustrating things. You're just, you know, piling into your memory. You're learning how to convert your ideas, stuff you want to say, into the new language at the same time, you know, that you're hacking words and learning more about the structure and increasing your language consciousness generally. And the language is always weaved horizontally, you know. It's not like, okay, here's the present. You have to learn all the present and then you can move on, because that's not the way you speak and that's not the way the language works either. Like, no. The way the language relates into itself is not vertical. It's much more horizontal. You know, you get related elements in present, past, and then in different word types like prepositions and nouns. And, you know, you see that the language has the same kind of concern or idea that runs through all of that. So, you know, like you're piecing the language together. You can use what you know from the beginning. You don't have that pressure of like, okay, you know, I need to memorize or know this before I move on. You're allowed to be uncertain about stuff or some areas of stuff and be like, okay, you know, you're going to have to listen out and see what happens, you know, so you can revise what's going on with this. And it's all like, the experience is very integral. So it imagines that you're going to go out and find opportunities to use this language, because if not, why are you learning it as well? You know, be it chatting online or, you know, just consuming culture like movies and music. So you're constantly also getting the advice, you know, on how to digest this language that you're exposing yourself to constantly revise what you know, and also increase your awareness of what you don't know so you can fill those gaps. And the user feedback is that is really motivating. And, you know, I get a lot of feedback that they've tried 100 things and nothing worked, and finally everything is clicking together. So, yeah, for me, it's mostly about just really terrible material that's doing the rounds again and again and again. There's not a lot of thought behind it. There's a lot of thought behind how to sell it, but not so much behind what is being done there, you know. And then the people that pay the price for that are, you know, those that go out and buy it and lose their motivation afterwards and believe that they're incapable of learning another language.
Hey guys, just taking a quick break from the episode to talk to you about this show's sponsor, which is Glossika. I'm super excited to have Glossika on board, a really reputable and trusted language course producer. They're producing courses in many, many languages. I think they're over 50 to choose from at the moment, and you get access to all of them with a single subscription. And if you want to give it a try, you can go to tryglossika.com in one word, and get started for free, see if it's anything for you. What I really like about Glossika is the hands-off approach to the learning. So they give you a certain number of repetitions you need to do every day, and each sentence in those repetitions has some grammar elements that will mean that you slowly understand the language in context, and you build a repertoire of sentences that you can sort of refer to when you get a similar pattern of sentence in the future. So that's really cool. And there's some other language learning tools you can use on Glossika. They have a few different games, a few different ways of revising that's not just the main reps. But that's by far my favorite feature, that you can just kind of sit back, let the software do the repetition for you, and then do one segment a day. You know, it takes like 15 minutes, maybe half an hour if you want to do a little bit extra, and you're well on your way to rapid progress. So go to tryglossika.com, give it a try, say how much you like them for sponsoring the show, and hopefully they'll bring us they'll come back for the next season. So how did you even start language transfer? Was it initially frustration over the lack of good materials that made you sort of research there must be a better way, or did you always have sort of that method lying underneath?
Well, I always worked at did kind of social work, like NGOs and this kind of stuff. And from the inside, you know, it was kind of painful to see how money was used, how things were done, and the mentalities that were there. And I kind of decided for a while, this was when I was living in Buenos Aires, you know, kind of sod this. I just want to play my violin, which is something I was learning. And So I quit the NGO, and I was just giving English classes to pay for my violin classes. And by the time I'd got to Barcelona and then Cyprus afterwards, you know, and I'd continued to give these classes, I realized like, oh, this is my activism, you know, because I was having experiences with people that just thought they were incapable of learning or were crying about it, you know. And then the change in their confidence and their abilities, you know, through the classes and just that experience, it just made me realize, oh, this is my activism. And halfway through trying to publish the courses, and you know, I'd actually got an acceptance from some online platform, and on the phone to them, I kind of was just like, ah, you know, I've decided that I want to make this free. And I had no idea how I was going to do it. I had no idea how I was going to record a course and edit it or anything. It was just a very strong impulse. And so slowly and organically and kind of learning everything myself from, you know, like drawing and graphics to the audio editing and, you know, sustaining it from the first years through private classes in which I was then, you know, testing this material that I wanted to share for free, it all slowly came together.
Yeah, it's amazing. And now, can you give us an idea of some stats of where you are now? Like, how many courses do you have and downloads and those kind of numbers?
As far as I can detect, because there's a lot that I can't detect, the courses are used 20,000 minutes a day. So every 24 hours, there's 20,000 minutes of user time. There's 9 courses. There's introduction to French, introduction to Italian, Turkish, and Arabic. And I'm working on complete Arabic now. And there is complete Greek, complete Swahili, which is still releasing, wow. Complete German, which is half released. Introduction to English for Spanish speakers. So introducción a inglés. And I think there might have been one I've forgotten there. If I haven't said 9.
Right. But so a lot of different languages. And are you like in charge of all of them, or do you have people to sort of overlook? I assume you don't speak all these languages really fluently.
No. Like I haven't had a conversation in half of them. So, you know, the idea of language transfer was like I would do what I did with Spanish, you know, learn the language for myself and then share it. But I didn't get the support really to do that. So the kind of like learning it for myself bit could be bypassed because, you know, all I need to do is look at a language, understand what's going on in it, and think about how I would explain that and how I would teach that. And then I need to check everything, of course, with native speakers because I don't want to record wrong sentences and I want to check all of my ideas because I'm not just reproducing grammatical rules, you know, I'm reducing them to overriding ideas, but I need to test those as well. So I don't know, like, you know, Swahili, Turkish, Italian, I've never had the conversation in.
Right. Is that a challenge when you're making the courses, or do you have a system now that allows you to sort of bypass that and just work systematically at making these?
I mean, I don't have a system because the courses are so specifically thought out for each language. So it's not like I have a template that I apply to everything. Right. But of course, there are ideas that are applied and reapplied. But then every new language gives you new ideas because that language necessitates it. It's explained and presented in a different way. You know, so like French, for example, which has like quite little correspondence between what you write and what you pronounce. Mm-hmm. You know, this course is really thought much more in regards to how it sounds rather than how it's written, because it makes much more sense French when it's thought about in that way. Whereas, you know, like in the Latin languages, you know, we start with some vocabulary conversion from Latin because that makes sense with the languages, but that won't make sense for Swahili, you know?
Right.
And the idea Swahili has in the way it thinks about time, you know, you can't reapply the pathway you made for Greek, you know? So, I mean, there are the fundamental ideas, which is about the way you want to increase consciousness of language, the way you are dissecting and explaining the language, the way you understand that people learn, the way you reaffirm ideas and interconnect them. But these ideas give birth to like extremely different courses.
Right. And that's great. I think that's already doing it much differently than most of the traditional publishers who would just sort of do one thing and then copy paste it for the other courses.
For sure. And also they will translate it. So if you're going to teach Russian to a Spanish speaker and you're going to teach Russian to an English speaker, you can't translate that course.
No.
You're working with from a base of different languages, you know, and to clarify, because sometimes people ask me, you know, do you need to be a native English speaker to do the course? And of course not. You just need to know English. You know, a lot of my recording students aren't natives, but you are still referencing that language, you know. So if that course is in Spanish, then it's totally rethought for a Spanish speaker.
Yeah. And that's, I think that has to be done. But like we said before, unfortunately, not all language companies do that. They see it more as a quantity over quality, I feel like, where if you can dish out a lot of courses quickly and cheaply, then that's better for everyone. But of course, that creates these very generic courses that don't really have an impact.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just not the impetus, to be honest, to create better material. You know, there's just an impetus to sell more stuff. And this is the systemic pressure in which we live, whether you call that capitalism or the monetary economy, whatever you call it, it's the rules of how we live. You know, you move money around or you don't survive. But that does really frustrate me because, you know, they have so much more resources than I do, for example, that I'm just by myself relying on some volunteer collaborations and donations, you know, and I managed to do all of that. And then you have teams of people taking in millions and, you know, and they don't make that effort to rethink things, you know, and to put a lot of thought behind what they're doing generally.
Yeah, it's a shame. And I do believe what you said earlier is totally correct, that this kind of thing is what's causing a lot of language problems, because people buy these like Italian in a Week or whatever the bookshop has, because they probably sell really well, but they'd never get the results. Or maybe, you know, they read 5 pages and they're like, this is really boring. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not learning anything.
Yeah. Or even just general material, like vocabulary material, it's often just not thought out. Like I remember buying some vocabulary cards for Greek just to see what they did and couldn't believe, like, you've got a noun, and they don't even put the gender of the noun. It's just literally a card that will say like table and have the word on the other side, you know? And you have 3 genders in Greek. Like, how much effort is it for you to even just think that it would be useful that you put the table on the other side so we know what gender it is? You know, like, I mean, it's fascinating for me even.
That's bad. Like, for instance, for my German, I remember when I was a kid, I didn't really care about genders in words. Because I thought, well, okay, it doesn't matter which one I say. And so now my German is completely random. I just guess. But if somebody had told me back then, no, Chris, this is really important. And this is the, and this is der, and this is das.
Or just the habit. It's just the habit of the way you convey information. Every time you say house, you don't say house is house. You say the house is das house.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
I miss that, definitely. So I see the damage that's done, because obviously relearning every word, which is what you're doing.
And the publisher of these cards, I mean, the author of these vocabulary cards, is a name you see again and again in the little modern Greek material that there is, you know. It wasn't just a random thing I picked up either. So, I mean, for me, it's a huge problem, and they really have a moral responsibility to think about what they are teaching people about how much they can or can't learn.
Yeah, it's such a shame. But I don't know if, I mean, obviously you're doing a lot to change people's success with language learning, but I don't know if there's anything to be done about like all the crap stuff out there. I guess we can produce reviews online that gives them 1 stars, you know, to say don't use this. But I feel like it's always going to be a problem, because they're usually bought in like retail places, like bookshops, for instance, where you can't easily see what people are saying about it or reviews. So it's more of an impulsive buy, really, in these places.
I mean, what I would say is that stop buying this stuff, because you vote with your money generally, you know. And also if it's sealed and they don't let you check it out before you buy this kind of stuff, you know. And also just the fact by language transfer's existence, you know, this is like a practical protest to this as well, because it's like, look, some dude working by himself, you know, on next to nothing, can make material 100 times better and give it to you for free, you know. And also, you know, whenever I get a chance to moan about this kind of stuff I do, like in interviews.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I mean, that's the platform. That's what I can contribute with anyway. But I've always been impressed at how much you just give away for free. I remember coming across your website a few times in the last few years, and it's always like, what is the point of this? But now hearing you say it, it makes perfect sense.
People do get confused about that a lot. Like why? How? What? You know? And I've also thought a lot about it, because it's easy to just repeat the popular rhetoric of, you know, like why you're doing it and focus on that. But there are so many different interplaying elements to why I feel like I have to work like this. And an important one would be like just the way I want to interact with the world. Like, I feel like we should live in a system where one can just say, okay, like I'm a tree. I want to make my fruit. That's what I know how to do. Come and water the tree. You know, like, aren't we far too advanced to be still living just with competition as like a basic overriding ideology for something? Like, so the point here also is like, hey, look, collaboration makes more sense, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons, like, for making it free. And a lot of it, I guess, I've come to realize is kind of a bit about my ego as well. And dignity somehow, you know, like I feel like we should be able to have the dignity to participate and interact with each other in this way. I don't feel there's a lot of dignity in competition, you know, like I feel like we're not serving ourselves in our social design, you know. I feel like we grew out of it a long time ago, and if you can, you know, make a practical, productive protest to that, just in the way that you are doing things rather than just talking about the way things are being done, then, you know, I feel like that's great. So it kind of, you know, I was involved in different activism as well, and it all kind of, that and my work in the NGOs and that experience all kind of culminated into this project where I get to kind of exercise all of those things I need to exercise through and how the way I do this.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And I saw, obviously, the reason that we're having this discussion now is because you had a Ask Me Anything on Reddit the other day on the language learning subreddit. And I thought it was a perfect opportunity to get you on and talk about it, because obviously there was a lot of responses to that thread. You know, the language learning subreddit is not the biggest one on Reddit by any means, but there was a lot of comments in there. And also, there was even somebody asking when this interview would go out. So you definitely have a lot of fans of what you're doing. And I think a big part of that is because you're doing it in this way, you know, you call it positive activism. I think that's definitely true as well.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how you yourself have progressed as a language learner, because you've been doing language learning for quite a while, I assume. When did you start doing it?
I mean, I started, I think, in 2011, but really seriously since 2013, 14.
Okay. So what kind of changes have you felt as a language learner, or evolution have you gone through?
I feel like I've done something very dangerous that I can't undo to my brain.
Explain.
Sometimes I worry about it, because it's a muscle. Your brain is a muscle.
Yeah.
I wish I could convey, because I don't think anybody understands just how much I have to think about, how much stuff I need to think about to build a course, especially in a language I don't speak. Because it's woven together in a way that you're constantly needing to check, you know, is this going to make sense in every other situation? Where am I going from here? You know, when you're testing the sentences you're going to ask for in the audios, and, you know, you're having 100 thoughts at the same time of how and why. And I mean, it's such a mentally intensive work. Like, sometimes my forehead heats up and my glasses steam up, you know, like, and my dog comes to lick my forehead, you know.
What's the process like for you? Let's say if you're starting to learn a new, no, not starting to learn, sorry, starting to make a new course. I can't even imagine how complicated that must be.
So I just read about the grammar, and I start thinking about how I would explain it, how I would weave it together. You know, I start course writing pretty soon, but I write and I rewrite and I rewrite and I rewrite. And because, you know, every time you're sure of where you're going, you're inserting that in before, you know, part of the weaving. So your writing is much part of the learning for me as well. But like I mentioned before, every language sets its own rules in this sense.
Of course.
So, you know, about like how have I developed, you know, personally through this, you know, every single time I have to make a new course, it makes the method stronger and the outlook of language more varied and possibly varied. And I've got to the point, like when I'm in public and just being exposed to language, that my brain is just jumping off all the time and seeing what it's connected to. And I find some sentences really funny because I don't like it in French if you say, like, I'm going to buy the sunglasses on Monday. You know, like sunglasses and Monday is all coming from the word moon, you know, like, and you will notice that. And, you know, that's what I feel like I've, and sometimes it's just hard to turn that off. So that's what I meant about the kind of like, oh, maybe I've done some unrepairable damage to myself. But it really has, I wish I could explain kind of the way it's changed my outlook on language and also thought, because thought interacts with language so much. And the big part of what we do in the courses is just break an idea up into all of its individual elements and think about what comes first in the new language. Mm-hmm. So you also, you know, constantly training yourself in understanding what an idea is and what are the elements of an idea and how you transcribe that to language. And that in itself is not necessarily language. And when you do that for 10 or 9, well, I think I've done it for 11. There's just 9 courses. That's kind of all of those structures are there in your brain doing stuff, which is kind of intangible. So yeah, it's had a big effect on me on a personal level. I'm not sure if it made me a little bit crazy.
But do you feel like it helps you? I don't know if you're actively still learning new languages, but do you feel like it's helping you, or is all new language you're doing connected to a course just for efficiency reasons?
I mean, I feel like it's helped me generally with thinking and problem solving, like in a general way, and that is odd and interesting. Of course, for languages, now I know what I need to know is a big part about language learning. What do I need to know? Like when you go into a new language, like, and you haven't done it before, or you haven't been taught in a way that makes you learn about language, you don't know what you need to know.
Right.
But now we know what are the boxes to check, what are the possible things that might happen in this language, because this thing happens in Swahili or that thing happens in German, you know? So the reason I don't speak the languages is just because I'm so overwhelmed with work, you know, like I dissect one, I teach it, I record it, I edit it, and there's the new one, you know?
Right.
But if there's one that I specifically like want to learn for my life, so like Arabic, for example, I really want to get fluent because I really enjoy Arabic. So now when I have time to work on that second part, the complete Arabic, you know, I will also be pursuing my own Arabic at the same time. And yeah, like that process, it's totally demystified now.
Right. So it's a huge personal growth as well. At the same time as the courses are becoming better and more efficient.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really interesting. And when you do the courses, maybe give a little, not a sample, but maybe for people who haven't tried language transfer before, could you just give a little, like, how is it structured? You mentioned a bit of grammar, like how much grammar is there actually? I want to also ask you about that, because there's been a big move, I feel like, in modern language learning to get away from grammar and go more into, well, we'll give you some content and then the grammar will sort of assimilate over time. So we don't spend as much time actually explaining the grammar rules, which is a direct response to, I think, schools use to teach languages as like math, you know, where you just basically drill in grammar rules all day and you never learn to say anything,
yeah.
Which is still a problem in some parts of the education system. But I guess let's start with that. How much grammar is enough grammar, and how do you approach it in language transfer?
I think one of the... an interesting point about language generally that comes up through your question is how, you know, like we all have idiolects and we all understand different things from different words. So when you say grammar, some people will automatically jump to, you know, I think what you mean, which is, you know, like just teaching the rules. And other people will jump with that idea to thinking about prescriptive grammar and how you should write and what is the official way to speak, you know, and how in English you shouldn't end the sentence with a preposition. But of course, everybody does. So
yeah.
The grammar for the courses is, you know, how people speak. But
okay. So it's very practical.
Yeah, but it is seen in its entirety, you know. So like everything a verb might do, you know, everything a noun might do. And it's not also like the introduction and the compose is not like beginners, you know, and then hard stuff either. It's just like the first 5 hours and then, or 7 hours or whatever, and then the next 7 hours. Right. You know? Because the way the course is weaved, even if you've been trying to learn a language for a long time, you will still start at the beginning and be learning things from the beginning because it's woven in a way, you know, that isn't vertical, you know, so you're not like going like simple stuff, hard stuff. But we do see everything. And, you know, like we don't call it grammar either, you know, and apart from like noun, adjective and verb, which we constantly define and we use those words, like, you know, I mean, in Spanish, for example, the subjunctive, I like to call it the mood tense, because what it does is shows some kind of mood, you know. So we don't use grammatical terminology so much, like we refer a lot to things by like what they do or how they look, which makes much more sense. So you're not always making that translation in your own head about what a grammatical term means. We look at what we are doing in the language we are teaching. So obviously, a lot of the time it overlaps. When you say wood in English is where you would say wood in Spanish. There's no reason under the sun to describe the grammar of wood and the kind of situations that you use wood, you know, like in a conditional or regret or this or that, or, you know, when it's the same in both languages, why would you confuse the learner, you know, by teaching grammar in that kind of prescriptive way instead of just like increasing the consciousness of what they are already doing in their language and how much of that transfers over to the new language and how much of it doesn't.
And I feel this helps a lot when you start to learn more languages as well. That's not unique to language transfer necessarily, but I found the more that I learn in, let's say, Russian and I was doing some Hungarian as well, the more I know about other languages, the way they're made, the easier it is for me to understand new ones. And especially if the teacher is also aware of a couple languages, because they will say stuff like, oh, it's like this in that, you know?
Yeah. I always ask in my workshops, like, what languages are spoken here, you know, so I can improvise a little bit and mix it up a bit more like that. That's right.
Yeah, that's great. So take us to like a typical like setup. How many people are involved in each? I don't know if you call them lessons or episodes, but each part of the courses. How many people are involved? How many people do you listen to in the call? And are there different like skill levels or how do you structure them at the moment?
When you say how many people are involved, you mean in the production?
Yeah, like everyone from the, I don't know if you have an audio guy and a...
Are you kidding me? Like, it's just me. This is why I'm complaining all the time. Yeah, like, I mean, the thing that I won't do anymore, like, once I've released the current audios, is release more audios. Because, that's hell. Like, around 60, 70% of my energy is on editing audios of myself. And that's been like a 5-year tunnel.
Right.
Taking the spit sounds out, you know, and I have, okay, so I have native speakers that check the audios, you know, but I still need to check with an eagle ear myself because, you know, native speakers, they can miss anything. Even though you would expect that something wrong would jump out at their ear straight away, but the way the course is woven, you know, it's really not so simple. So, you know, I need to listen to each one 5 times with an eagle ear and check all of my doubts. But, you know, there can be anything from like 2 to 8 native speaker checkers on the audios. And, you know, there are okay. Now I'm having collaborations on the scripts as well. So I'm doing them on Google Docs and like natives can answer my questions, which is awesome. You know, like I can just be there and go like, oh, maybe I'd put this, but I'm not sure if this, and I just can ask, and people are surprised like how little I know when I start course writing or how much doubts I have, but because I know what I need to know, you know, it can really work like that. So there are some people involved with that, but the thing is, like, you know, a lot of people get in contact to volunteer and very, very few people do something, and I complained about that as well, and I have a lot less people getting in touch now, which is brilliant because it's brilliant for my motivation to not have so many promises and then people disappearing. I'm like much more energized. So yeah, I mean, it's mostly just me and some, you know, occasional volunteer collaborations helping me get it all along.
All right. And how do you make sure, I mean, I know you get it checked, but how do you learn the pronunciation, to teach? And I know you don't need to be absolutely perfect to teach. I'm thinking of, for instance, Michel Thomas was a famous example of his, I think people criticize him the most for a terrible accent and in most of his languages. But how did you, as a fledgling course creator, as it were, come up with the pronunciation? How did you teach yourself pronunciation in a language that you maybe didn't know as well as your, let's say, native language?
I had a similar attitude to Michel Thomas as far as that was concerned, to be honest, because I think that if you're a non-native teaching a language, you just have to make, well, maybe there we differ, because you should just make your accent not painful. Well, maybe his at times was a bit painful. You're going to be speaking to natives. That's what you're getting the language for, right? So, I mean, you're not going to base your pronunciation on mine, but at the same time, my pronunciation should be correct. You know, so like I listen to recordings of the words before online and this kind of stuff, but with the stress of the recording situation, which is always stressful because I don't have a studio and I have to be conscious of every noise that passes outside and if I need to repeat things and all of that, you know, and also holding together the whole structure of the lesson and what you're doing, my pronunciation can suffer, but that gets picked up in the native proofing, and then anything unforgivable I go back and edit it. So sometimes I have to go back through audios and edit every single occasion of a certain vowel, which is so annoying. Yes, but like I say, that's all going to be a thing of the past once I start with the new way of sharing material, which is going to be doing open public workshops where I will hopefully have natives to do the pronunciation and film them, and I will be sharing those video recordings, which I will not watch myself, I will not edit them, and they will remain unedited and rudimentary until we reach the $3,000 milestone on the monthly Patreon campaign, which will give me like $1,000 each month to dedicate towards video editing help, like hiring somebody to do that, which will be like a huge injection of energy for me, because I love this project. The only thing that makes it painful is all of the audio editing.
I can definitely imagine that. So that's the future of language transfer. Or do you have ever any other sort of big plans? Do you plan to go back and add to previous courses, or what do you call it?
Hopefully that's the future, because it all depends on the support received. Like there's $1,600 and something at the moment on the Patreon campaign. The only way I'm able to survive on that and pay for the LT costs is because I got very lucky in Barcelona. Like I have like a sublet that's very cheap, that's a favor, and I'm not sure how long it will last. Unless I get to the 2,000 regularly clearing the $2,000 milestone by 2019, I will go part-time on the project. Now, I'm also experimenting with some other ideas. Like there's a guy here in Barcelona who I'm slowly training in the method, and I'm trying to attract other teachers. Like I'm making meetups and stuff, and to see if I can get like a small team of like-minded people where I can teach them the method. They can make paid private classes as part of their training. A small percentage of that, can then go towards an LT school where they are trained and where I do other activities. So I'm also looking at other models that will keep this going. But the phase of, sacrificing my life to the project, which I've done really for the last 5 years, day and night working on this. And, I can't ignore those sacrifices anymore. So far into the project, it's so popular, there are so many courses, I've got it off the ground. I shouldn't have to continue doing this, and it's totally like unsustainable as well. So it's really like a kind of make or break year for language transfer. It's not going to go anywhere. I will always work on it part-time if the help doesn't come by 2019, but if the usership want me to stay part-time as much as I would like to, then Patreon.com/language transfer.
Great. Good job putting that in there. I was going to add it if you didn't. So I think that's obviously a great cause, and I really encourage people to, you know, check out the courses first, maybe, and then pony up the money afterwards. But having it for free, having this kind of like donation ware, as it were, I think it's a really great concept, because there are loads of people out there who want to learn languages but probably don't have much in terms of ready income to spend on it. Even, you know, $10-$20 is probably a lot of money for a lot of people. So having the opportunity that people who have the money to do it to kind of subsidize the people who don't, I think.
Well, yeah, for sure. And another reason it's free is because, you know, people might not get around to trying language transfer before trying everything else, because it is quite an odd thing if you compare it to what is the norm. You know, and by that point, most people would have already spent too much and not be willing and, you know, have already given, you know. So when somebody contributes to language transfer, they're not choosing to pay for something that's free, you know. Like you say, they are building a bridge between those people that wouldn't make their way to language transfer if it weren't free. And, you know, it's been built. Often I get asked, why don't you start charging so you can continue and stuff? You know, that was never the agreement, you know. That was never what I wanted to do with the project either. So it's going to stay free always.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to go about it. I guess, I mean, you could always do, like you mentioned before, like the workshops and stuff for the most dedicated students. That could be like an add-on, but having the core materials and the like the courses that you need to learn the languages free, I think.
And also, you know, something that's really important for me is that, you know, you go to language transfer and you don't have any adverts. You go to the YouTube videos and there is nobody telling you that you should be cooler before you start learning. You know, there are no adverts. Right. I mean, they're not monetized, the videos. You know, you go to the website and you don't have a logo there, you know, kind of peeing on the corner of the website, you know, taking ownership over something which is just a guy giving something. And I think it's important that you see that, because that also empowers other people that just want to be a guy or a girl giving something, you know. Yes. And so that's also what you contribute towards, you know, no adverts and no sponsorship as well.
A good experience, like there's no interruption in the lessons either, you know, to promote stuff. It's just pure, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for me, that's like, if you're gonna, like, you know, it's been a lot of love and effort and sacrifice to make language transfer, and if you make something with all of that, you know, why are you gonna be so willing to let you know, somebody come in? Like, I really just feel like it's like peeing on a lamppost, something, you know. Like, that's mine. And I you know, if I were to do something for money, I would do something else, like work on Game of Thrones. I really want to work on the coming spin-offs of Game of Thrones. I want to be the language guy. I emailed the current language guy, asked if they needed any help.
Well, I'm sure people on Game
of Thrones. That's a shout out. If I do that, I'm so perfectly formed for this, I promise.
And yeah, I mean, we have a big
half my wages on language transfer. Get me that job, somebody.
A lot of the Game of Thrones production team are listening, I'm sure. give me her to be your new language, junior language guy, I guess. You can move up the ranks that way.
I want a whole language for myself to make.
Right. Have you experimented with that before? Or?
No, but it's like half of what I do already. I mean, if you think about it, dissecting languages you don't speak to work out what's going on in them, to teach them, as opposed to, you know, just looking at a culture and seeing what kind of language they might have and inventing it yourself and making the rules. I mean, yeah, for sure.
It's the other way around, in a way.
Yeah, it's the other way around than half the work. Like, I might make somebody angry by saying that, but if they listen to the whole interview, they will understand how much I work.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like, you just have some building blocks, but you're still breaking them down to ideas. And if you started with nothing and you wanted to make your own language, you would have to start with the ideas and make the building blocks.
Exactly. You know? Like, you know, you're not checking if you're right all the time. Like, you are God in that.
Instance. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. You've got unlimited power.
Yes. And I love the idea. I love the idea of like, okay, you know, you have these people, this is the way they live, this is their culture, and, you know, make them a language. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I think we're about to reach the end here. Do you have any final shout outs or any other links or resources that you want people to check out before we end?
Nope, not really. I think we've said it all. Just do try this, even if you find me slightly irritating.
LanguageTransfer.org. Try the courses.
Do try the courses. I promise you won't regret it. And yeah, if you love what you see, please share, please support if you can. If you want to see more of this stuff in the world, then it is within your power to make it happen. $1 a month tends not to hurt.
Right. And you can learn a language.
And you can learn a language.
Perfect, Michal. Thank you so much for coming on such a quick notice and for bearing with all these technical problems and time zones and everything. It's a real pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.